Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, September 18th, 2001. In the Creekside Room are this morning Carol Osterlund and Robert Sellers. Today's session number is OSC 2001-02, and it's titled Exploring Life's Stories, the Creative Path of Memoir and Poetry. Let's listen in.
13, 14 years ago, and I went into the writer's workshop. I was the author of a variety of things, and I had picked the one on writing fiction. And the room was just absolutely jam-packed, and it was not a really big room to begin with, and the instructor was a really big man, the way you described him, an Arab man. He looked at the group and he said, "Well, now, I want to tell you, today we're going to write poetry." It was a fiction workshop. He says, "Now, if any of you don't like to write poetry, you're free to leave, because I really believe that in the same way that an artist carries a notebook with him and makes those impressions, well, a true writer keeps a notebook and you jot down impressions of people, of anything. It's little capsules, and many of these things are really like short three-verse poems. And it's really good discipline for your other writing to be able to condense your thoughts into fairly brief, concise sentences, into something that is readable and understandable. So we're going to write poetry. So if any of you don't want to stay here, you're free to leave." Well, about half the class got up and left. So then he came back and he said, "Now I believe that you should be able to write about anything. So we're going to write erotic poetry."
Oh, wow.
So, this started through a few people. So there were 12 of us left. So then he said, "Now that I have the real writers in the group, I'll tell you what we're really going to do." So I'm going to say, "Welcome back. Now that I have the real writers here, I'll look forward to it. We're going to talk about journaling." We really did write some poems, but he said, and it's a good exercise, he said, "Look around the room and see if you can describe something in a way that will tell about a person, humanize some inanimate object so that you would understand the person who is part of that." And we were all sitting in a circle, just 12 of us, and I looked at everybody's shoes. And, I was a woman in my late 50s, and I looked at all the shoes, and there were these soft moccasins, and, the hiking boots, and beautiful leather sandals, and I was there with my little black pumps, with the low heels. So I described everybody's shoes, that they looked as moccasins that hug somebody's feet, and the hiking boots that looked like they really would take the person anywhere. And I said, "I'm afraid that my very proper black pumps say more about me than I wish." And then I ended my little thing saying, "I wish I had worn shiny black tap shoes and pink ballet slippers." So I think I always feel that way. I'm always wishing that we could really show outside what we feel inside. And this is what we're going to do too. Journaling should be fun. I have to start off with an apology to you. This is a magazine called Personal Journaling, and it just happens that on page 12 is the same thing as if you've noticed the bulletin board around the other side. I cut out the review that the editor very nicely wrote about our book, and it's in this magazine. And so I was talking to her on the phone and mentioned that I was going to be teaching at an elder hostel, and so she said, "Oh, let me send you some complimentary copies." Well, I'm sorry to tell you that the complimentary copies are sitting in the car at the landing. we're trying in such a hurry to get on the ship. And Diane said that we might give somebody our key and they could go looking at it. But if you saw our car as we packed it from Phoenix to San Diego to here, and back, from California to San Diego and up here and back to Phoenix before we get home, when we're home. I didn't see how I could describe to anyone where to find that. So if you're interested, I do have copies at home, and if you'll, sometime before you leave, check your name, and we'll mail you a copy when we get home. So then I will fulfill my obligation to the very gracious editor. And it is, there's really a lot of good things in it, and it's on the stands all the time. I can't believe that it's $5 an issue. It kills me that magazines cost that much. Mm-hmm. But there's really a lot of good information, and it is in Barnes & Noble, so if you have one close to you, you can go sit and read it and then put it back. No, well, they really urge you to do that. They really say you can get coffee, at least ours, that you can get coffee from the Starbucks. Or something is right by most of them, and you can take it and find an easy chair to sit and read as long as you want. It's a lovely gift to the community. This is a part of an article by the editor, and she says, "Have fun. When we were kids, we were told this all the time, especially as we head out the door for our backyard adventures. Somewhere through the years, though, time for play disappears, and we forget that making time for the things we enjoy is just as important to our well-being as productive jobs or secure futures. It's time to remind ourselves that having fun is what makes life a pleasure to live and write about. Fun time to me is an appointment with what lifts my spirits. So it becomes everything from attending poetry readings, to flying kites, to listening to live music, to meeting a friend for lunch in the middle of a busy workday. It is both downtime and adventure, solitary and communal. But most importantly, it is a commitment to the little kid still skipping around in my heart. It's my loyalty to the laughs, the goofing off, the play that was the reason she had to wake each morning, tie on her sneakers, and hurry outside to greet the day." So I think we need to, she says, recently I committed myself to making time for fun. So she says she meets people, so she tells what she does. And asks us to think about if you really wanted to do something for fun, what would you do? What brings out the kid in you? Just like I said about the shoes, that I was once a pretty good tap dancer. And I still really love to dance. A friend of ours who's you saw Fran Weaver, who was she replaced Irma Bombeck on the Today Show, and her whole things that she writes about is aimed at senior citizens. I hate that term, but a little class of that one. The very first article she ever sold, she wrote because a group of about six of the ladies met every once a week, and they called it the Tethered Flight Club, and they went on a hill and flew kites.
In Pueblo, Colorado.
Yeah, and they had a wonderful time being outside together, laughing and talking and flying kites. Well, she wrote an article about it, and she didn't sell it at first, and then she sent it to Vogue magazine, and she put a cover letter on it that said, "Actually, flying kites help improve your bus line." There's that one of her stories she tells. That if you want to, brighten other people's day, she'll lecture on the senior lifestyle, and she says, you know, she says, this lecture, I'll tell you one thing to remember, and it'll be the most important thing I'll tell you the whole time. You don't have to remember anything else. You know, all those pictures you take, and you get home with the ones where you took a picture, and she says, I have probably 100 of my mother that's no, not now. You never know what to do with it. So she says, I'll tell you, when you pay your bills every month, you put one in with your bill. She really brightens their day. I recommend your books are, one is called The Girls with the Grandmother Faces. There's several that all about she was widowed at 55 and actually was a graduate but went back and took creative writing classes and started writing and lecturing, and she's just a remarkable woman.
Who's her
name? Fran Weaver.
Yeah. I had a 90-year-old friend who every time she wrote out the bill to the water company, wrote it to Crookston Champagne Company, and they cashed it every time.
she was on a panel at also at the Writers' Conference. I'll go on with our journaling. And she was on with Jonathan Winters and Fanny Flagg and another young man who was a scriptwriter that I didn't know. And they were all talking about the fact that in humor nowadays, the question was asked of them, is it very difficult for you because there's no more ethnic jokes anymore, you know, there's nothing, it's very difficult to poke fun at anything because we have such sensitive and politically incorrect areas. And the others on the panel sort of answered in different ways and how they dealt with it. And then Fran said, well, I don't really have any problem. She says, the audience I talk to, if I make them mad, they've forgotten the next day. Journaling can be really reflect your life at different times. And as I said yesterday, what I'll do is start with a couple of things that I did that show my own response to life at very different times in my life. When I was 16, my brother was missing action. And I was able, 50 years later, to go to New Guinea and stand in a... he was never found. So 50 years later, we were in New Guinea in a public cemetery still run by the Australians. And so these are responses at 16 and 50 years later. I want no gold star in my window, proclaiming the life is through. Let visions of laughter and music live on in the color of blue. May his violin sing in the evening and merge and refract. I walk among 5,000 graves, asterisks to an almost forgotten war. The green of the lawn stretches from past sorrows to unknown tomorrows. I cannot walk it. I must stand and wonder what I feel. I looked up to shrouded mountains. This is the land my brother knew 50 years ago. Was it kind to him before he fell? Did this far island ever hear his laughter? Did any bird sing on that last day? What view of jungle growth filled his eyes before they closed forever? I think of Jim as he was, striding up the walk from college, tennis racket in hand, smiling when he won his match. I still see him in the evening, swaying to the music of his violin. In this instant, his image is more real than the grass are the mountains, or the shaded headstone beneath my hand, the one marked Unknown Airman, 1945. So, when you think about journaling, of course, those were pretty big subjects I was writing about, but we'll start simply. Start with the little things. Something your grandchild said, something that was especially joyful that day, something that bothered you, just but whatever comes to your mind. Just don't think about any rhyme or reason. Our workshop leader in Phoenix and Porter in particular calls such things to a commonplace journal, where if you read something especially, like Robert read from yesterday, even from a candy wrapper, that appeals to you, jot that down. It's a way to get started writing. It doesn't all have to come from inside. Just be aware as you move through a day of what moves you and why. Robert, all through his years as a chemical engineer, which is not very popular, he dealt with agricultural chemicals, which was his life work. And if you want to talk to him about what the benefits of those are, sometimes he'd be really interested in having a discussion with you. Because a lot of, like rice in China was made more protein, more, I can't describe it well, but anyway.
More nutritious,
and you know, a lot of good was done with agricultural chemicals. But I have a daughter-in-law who, like so many others, says, and you know, and we talk here about wanting to keep whole foods for her family and free. And I have a six-year-old granddaughter, and she tasted some potatoes her mother had bought, and she said, "Well, I think they taste better with pesticides." Robert immediately gave her a hug. But these are the kind of things, you know, they're easy to forget if you don't.
How about Madeline? I got married.
Oh, yeah, well, I don't really need to tell you. Okay, when her older sister was about the same age. And,
she was so wild.
Yeah, Madeline was really acting silly, and my daughter-in-law said to her, "You're really out of this world. You act like you're from another planet." And of course, Madeline has a smattering of, at that time, of a rather wide vocabulary that she rather mixes up, and she says, "You mean I'm like from outer space? You mean like from the planet Uterus?" Topics of these, I expand on each as we go along, but you will, there's a handout at the end that has most of these rules for journaling. And I want to say, you know, there are wonderful books and wonderful classes, and all we can really do today is just, all I'm really trying to do is get you in the mood to do it. And there are ways you can, you know, be more precise about it or more directed if you want to. This book has been around a long time. It's called The Artist's Way, and it really talks about what they call the morning pages. And I'm sure most of you are familiar with it, but it's a spiritual approach to journaling. And it's up here if anybody wants to look at it. It's in most bookstores still. I saw one at Diane's house. And then there's lots of books, either on Amazon or through Barnes & Noble, or any bookstore. And this one is called Writing for Self-Discovery. And you can look at them at the break, you know, afterwards or something, or take notes. And what I'm reading from here, these are actually things that are some hints from journal writing by Michael Heller and Lynn Nelson. Yeah, this in your handout.
Virgil
so,
Jennings, yeah.
Yeah, so here again. So.
They're where?
Hmm?
You're seeing our handout.
You'll get them. This is, I'm saying, you'll get a handout at the end of the, or some, you know, at the end, and it lists really almost everything I'm talking about. So, in the name of where I gathered the information is here. Let go of shoulds and oughts. There's really no right way and no wrong way. It's called personal journaling because that's what it is. It's very personal, and it's up to you to decide. And remember that you're not being brave. We said yesterday that it's unfortunate that we live in an era of such professionalism that everything is supposed to be for the market or for somebody else to buy. This is certainly not that. This is for your own growth. This is for you to remember the joyous times. And one of the articles in this issue of personal journaling is about create a happy book. Just record the things during the day that make you happy. You know, if you looked around the room, you know, I could say, always the smile on Robert's face. I like your fish pin. He likes me. You know, or just any little things in the room. I love the color red. Everybody would have their own list. And you can encourage other people to tell you if you're having lunch with them, you know, what right now makes you happy? And keep a happy book. In this terrible time, maybe we need to remember the little things that make us happy. Then, give yourself permission to let go. But expect to struggle with a part of your fears, because every would-be writer faces the horrible blank page. And that's why I say start writing, maybe write what somebody else did. You know, just start writing, whatever you're writing. Once you get writing, then it becomes a much more simple task. Write about your fears. What can I put on this horrible blank page? Just write that. I look at it. What can I put on it? So write what you would like to put on it. How do you wish your day had been? Yesterday, remember a woman in class said she didn't want to remember the sad times. You don't have to. But if you want to think back, no one our age has arrived now without a sheriff. Our share of trauma and grief, and remember the things that led you through those things, how you survived, and those are things that are wonderful for somebody to pick up and read sometimes. What sustained you? What gave you the courage when you just thought everything was awful to go on the next day and the next and the next? What sustained you? We talked a little bit about that yesterday. I always say that to me the most powerful word almost in the 23rd Psalm is the word through. Yea, that I walk through the valley. And that is, it promises us that you're not walking into a closed-in box canyon. You're walking through. And that's one of the promises that prayer says for us, that we know. So I remember just that word. I walk through the valley. So focus on what you'd like to remember. Keep a little book with you, like I said at the beginning. Talk to yourself in the journal. Think of yourself as someone you would like to know and care for. Be good to yourself. You know, own some of your secret wishes. Think about how you would like them to come true. It's a wonderful way to get to know yourself, to work through problems. If you don't know the answers, then make a list of what your choices might be. These are all ways that you can use this little book in front of you is a real guidebook for your days. Own your feelings. Speak for yourself. Say, I. And though, you know, I talked about constantly editing my poems, which I always do, this is not, what you write here is not for editing. It's to write in a full emotion of feeling as you work your way through something. And you really don't go back and edit it unless you decide later that, you know, you will pick out parts of it. But it's not, this is not, don't be a critic as you write. Just, you know, this is what I put on, write on, you know, slash write on. You want to write you can get in a little bit about if you're stuck. I really, for me, I always use meditation when I'm working through a problem. My best thing to do is to think about it just before I go to sleep, and I do a very not a structured, but I have a routine I go through to really still my body. And it's a form of prayer. I'm asking that God will be with me, will enter my body, that I will be at rest, and that what I've been working through, my dreams or whatever, or answers will come. Many times I wake up in the night and something will come to me, but I don't get up and write it. I'm one of these people that is very auditory, and so I remember. And so I'll maybe even think of a whole poem, and then, but then I'll go back to sleep and I'll write it in the morning. There was a time in my life when I dreamed whole lyrics. Actually, they came to me, just full rhyme, two or three verses. And they're all, the whole imagery was of, I think, like ancient Persia. There was camels and slave girls and kings. And I don't know where they came from. I can rationalize the visions. I probably have 25 poems that are that way. And I can rationalize it by saying I remember as a little girl we moved from California to Texas and then back again to California a few years later. So as a very small child, we went through the desert. And I think maybe this is one reason why I've been very at home in Phoenix, up there, you know, never having lived there before, that there's something in me that responds to these wide desert vistas. But why the slave girls and the camels came in, I don't know. I loved Alibaba and the 40 Thieves and all the thousand, you know, Arabian Nights. This is one of those poems. It's called Outside the Mizmir Gate. I walk the road to Mizmir, the ancient secret city. Give the beggar at the wall bright coins of love and pity. Stay, he says. And so we talk of all I had discerned. He answers me with wisdom, with truths I had not learned. Thus, teacher becomes student. He goes inside. I wait. Beg for alms from travelers outside the Mizmir Gate. Until the day I enter, I wait and search each face. Are you the one seeking truth, who asks to take my place? So that's one I'm thinking about. I'm not really sure what it means. I think it would mean a lot of different things to different people, and I guess that's one thing about writing. I think you can write, and it's true for me, I can write something one way and put it aside. And it's almost like it becomes real and has its own legs and walks off. And because I'll go back 10 years later and I'll see something else in that poem or in that writing that I didn't know I could get. And it's a wonderful experience. And I, you know, this is why keep your writing and go back and how far you've come from when you wrote that. Or you wish you could go back there and capture those feelings again. You know, this is, as you say, this is the whole message these 5 days is not. Right. So you don't know where it will take you. Just like I said, you can be a child playing in the garden, building in the garage, rummaging in an attic. And here again, this is kind of fun. In this personal journaling, they talk about, imagine the stories your collections would tell. Write about something you lost, something you found, something you left behind, something you gave away. Open the kitchen drawer where miscellaneous things end up, or the basket by the door, the shelf in the closet. Take out the items one by one. Make a list of the collection, then choose one and write about it. What have you tried to throw away but couldn't? What did you toss out that you wish you had back? What did you discard by mistake? Think of something you use or wear or display because somebody gave it to you, but secretly you don't like it. You might be gave it to you, but you don't like about it. Visit a thrift store or a consignment shop. Wander through the dusty aisles and pick up things. Hold them in your hands. Listen for the stories they tell. If you want, ask about an item. Learn its most recent history. Seek something that resonates within you. Take it home and record its tale in the pages of your journal. Like the pharaohs of old, imagine what you'd like to be buried with. Make a list of things most precious and meaning. What object have you had the longest? Describe how it looks, tastes, feels, smells, and sounds. Tell how it came to you. Write its significance. Write something you want but cannot have. Ask about other people's stuff, like Robert's poem yesterday. Why does your mother keep that vase? What does the bird nest mean to your daughter? Where did that cufflink or brooch come from? And why is it so significant to your partner? What of your grandmother's which you want? And why? When you're out on a walk, notice lost or abandoned things along your way. Someone's sweater left on a park bench. A grocery list or a receipt flooding in the gutter, half a pair of sunglasses, a broken toy, a photograph. Make up stories about the objects and their owners. Within your jewelry box or another special place where you keep your most secret, private keepsakes are the stories of your heart. Create a list of these items. One time in a writer's group, we did some, I'm sure maybe you've all done things like this, but it's fun to have a stack of old magazines and give everybody a shoebox and have everybody find things in the magazines. And in the inside of the shoebox, you put pictures that sort of represent all the things that you are that nobody knows about. And then you put the lid on, and on the outside of the shoebox, you make a collage of what how you feel that other people perceive you. And then, of course, you talk about it. And I have a wonderful group of women. We've been together. We've been friends for, most of us, for 35 years until we moved away. And we lost two of the women of the eight to death. And we used to meet every 2 weeks. And I think of your group of women, Valerie. And, you know, we've really helped each other through everything from a few divorces, deaths of our spouses, mothers coming home, children, adult children coming home,
Mother, you all have to care.
But a collage is another wonderful way to add to things to your journal. You know, if you find something that just a picture of a room you like. And in a sense, too, I guess you have to define what the purpose of your journal is. If it really is just a personal memory book, if it's one thing or the other, but if you're really doing this commonplace book I'm talking about, tear out things out of magazines, or, you know, I like this and why. And it doesn't have to be absolutely neat and perfect, you know. Put a sketch in of something that you like that day. It can be, it doesn't have to be, you know, a beautiful, pristine book that somebody else is going to pick up. It's your record of what you want to keep from today for tomorrow.
Yeah, I might.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was, when you were talking about that, actually, Diane Shiner gave me what became my journal book, but it was loosely, but she covered it with material from the Japanese used for sleeping garments, or I believe pajamas and so forth, whatever it was, but anyhow, it's very distinctive and very beautiful. But in that book, or I had put my latest chart from an EKG. I bought a atrial flutter. The doctors and I have for 25 years. Neither gets better nor worse. But so that, looking again at a blank piece of paper, I said, gosh, I've got to get an inspiration. So I did, because the challenge was to write an ode. So this is the ode to my atrial flutter. The nurse says it's time for your EKG. And puts on the cold electrodes. Oh, you atrial flutter with a variable AV block. How do you louse up a rhythmical beat? Why can't you disappear like you did the four times your home was stopped? It was such a relief to have you gone and have a sinus rhythm to my beat. But back you steal like a prodigal son. No longer is my pulse a boom, a boom, a boom. It's now a boom, a boom. Pause, a boom, followed by a booba. I wish my chart would be normal EKG instead of ST abnormality with possible digitalis effect. All those things are on that darn chart, I guess. Or your atrial flutter with a variable AV block. Please let me be. You go your way. I'll go mine.
I'm going to tell Robert I'm a fellow sufferer.
Oh, good.
Did they ever stop your heart?
Yeah, four times.
You didn't put that in your poem.
Yeah.
Your home was stopped four times.
Oh, okay.
It was perfect, absolutely. The recovery from that is absolutely, it never felt so good. The doctor, recent doctor, says, no, you
I guess, and it's good for Robert to read that, because, see, there's really no rules. You can write about anything that affects you, and there it is. You know, so I said about thinking of the child that you were. What would that child like to do this minute? How long since you played jacks? What were your frustrations in trying to hit a baseball or make a ball soar through a hoop? I never could. I tried to play girls' sports, but I was terrible. Write at different times of the day, so experiment. What is really your time when you feel the most creative? And have a special place to write. I remember reading Virginia Woolf's wonderful essay on the early 1900s about every woman should have a room of her own. But we all do need, in order to really be truly creative, and of course at that time it was almost impossible for a woman to have a room of her own. But we can find a spot. I have a place in our home in Phoenix where I have it's the extension of our kitchen, and it's too little to call a family room, but I have a couch with a chaise longue as part of it, which is along the window. And that's my spot. And I can, because I like to put my feet up and I'm all curled up and I always have my pads.
Remember Emily and Charlotte Bronte?
Oh, right, yeah.
It was wrong for them to be creative. They had to hide, didn't they?
Oh, very much so, yeah. And now, but now, you know, I think probably the person who doesn't give you permission more than anyone else is yourself. You think, oh, I don't have time to do this today. I'd like to do it, but I don't have time. So where we used to, where women especially used to not be able to do this, they didn't have permission. Now you're the ones who need to give yourselves permission to do the things that bring you joy.
And you have to say no to something.
So find a place to be alone and quiet.
I love the poem Marcy was talking.
Sit with your journal open. When you are ready, write about what you are feeling. Try to do this for a half hour each day, preferably at the same time once it becomes your time. And if you want to record a spiritual journey, this is a very private journey. Start jotting down what moves you from the writing of others, which is what we said a little earlier. And here again, to me, as I do in the evening, if I quiet myself, if I do a meditation, for me, I still myself. I ask that only good thoughts come into me that will help me in my process. I ask God to be with me and bless me. And I quiet myself and I imagine God's healing light coming all the way through me, all the way through my body. And I'm a person who uses the word light a lot. My license plate reads in light. And when I pray for somebody, I imagine them wrapped in light, in God's healing light. So this is a very special metaphor for me. So I imagine God's light moving through me, and I get still. And then when I feel like I'm ready, then I start writing. It only takes 4 or 5 minutes. You know, it's not a long, lengthy process. You're not in a deep meditation. There are ways, you know, to do self-hypnosis and go deeper. But this is really plenty just to quiet yourself. And, you know, you visualize God's light or this, you know, or creative light coming through you and out of the pencil. And remember, if you sit quietly with yourself for a half an hour and write nothing, the half hour will not be wasted. As you write, look closely at one or two things that are on your mind, not 100. Try to write as honestly as you can. Say what you see more than what you think you should see. It's an interesting distinction. When you see yourself being pretentious or phony, say that. Talk to yourself about it. Avoid judgments. Act amazed. Wow, I did that. I wrote that. Hey, that's pretty good. Write how you feel about one thing that happened today. Avoid just listing what happened, the mere contents of your life. Write how you feel inside about the things that happened to you. Explore your relationship with the things of your life. These poems, read your, I think this is a wonderful thing from Robert's journal, when you're in Africa, because we were so impressed with so many new sights and sounds, and I think Robert captured it so well.
This is part of the book we did include, and it's just a reading. The most fascinating aspect of our travels has been the opportunity to observe, be with, and when possible, to talk to the people we have encountered. To describe Africa in a few words, we found it remarkable that the people could live in poverty with so much pride. The dirt or grass. Rondavals or huts is swept so clean that it appears more like a movie set rather than a place where natives live. The people walk straight and erect for miles to go to the market or return to their village of their birth when the chief or another noble dies. Merchants enjoy bargaining for their wares to the point they were willing to trade a carving that took many days for a t-shirt or a week's work for a pair of white shoes that might look nice. The exotic experience in Botswana, Malawi, South Africa, and Zimbabwe challenged all the five senses. How could I describe the sensations to someone who has never been there? Open your eyes to behold an orange sunrise sky reflected in the surface of Lake Kariba. The sight of 180 waiting in line to fill every imaginable container with paraffin, which is kerosene to us, from a tank truck. Watch a beautiful woman dressed in orange and black African print as she raises her arm with an open palm in friendly salute. They never wave, they always bat. Savor the taste of a biscuit sandwich with ham and scrambled eggs accompanied by gin and tonic on a boat that resembles the African queen. In the middle of the River Shire in Malawi, chugging past crocodiles, hippopotami, and deep blue water hyacinths. In South Africa, eat crayfish as big and as delightful as a 3-pound Maine lobster, while overlooking the Indian Ocean. The following afternoon, delight in a picnic lunch of crisp apples, smooth pate, cold chardonnay on the lawn of an estate winery. Hold your ears to shut out the roar of the water coming over Victoria Falls. Then strain to hear the swish of elephants pulling grass as they feed at night. And smile at the last night in Kansas City call of the doves compared to our mournful cooing birds. Experience the excitement of a lion's roar even when you know it's miles away. Drive through sugarcane fields, smell the dirt roadways that are sprayed with molasses to control the dust. The pungent odor of bright tropical fish when spread on nets to dry in the sun, and the aroma of barbecued chicken awaiting as you walk toward a large treehouse following a canoe trip down the river on a game farm. The fragrance of a newly opened plumeria blossom. Reach through a chain link fence to feel the unbelievable strength underlying the coat of a 3-year-old lioness. Revel in the refreshment of a shower with rock walls open to a star-filled sky and feel the smooth wood of a carved elephant or a dancing family in stone. And finally, the warmth in the handshake of an airport guard before boarding a plane for home.
So that's what Robert was doing, is writing about how he felt, how it could really touch and smell what you heard. And, of course, this all makes your writing really come alive and makes your memories very strong. So look for images and metaphors that express what things feel and sound and taste like to you. Carry the journal with you if you can. Write down things when they occur to you, like taking notes in class. Only here you are the teacher. Remember that. Keep the journal by your bed. Open it for a few minutes before falling asleep. See what twilight images surface. When you wake up, record any dreams that you remember. And if there are stories someone told you while you were sleeping, think of your journal as a scrapbook, and that's what I said before. You know, paste things in. Use it. Make it a living, changing thing for the day. Think out loud in the journal. It's all right to take risks. It's all right to sound stupid or be wrong. In the journal, there is no stupid and no wrong. I have been struggling with, in earlier years, I worked for a lot of years with the mission board of the Congregational Church. I was a layperson, but I served on the board for rural ministries. We used to have to go and give sermons, stewardship to little churches. And as a layperson, I got assigned to little churches. The ministers got assigned to big churches. But it was a wonderful experience, and I used to talk about the gifts that we were given and how we give because we have been given so much. And this is an old journal entry of mine from years ago at that time. And I just read it because it's good to remember, and it, you know, to me the things are still true. My prayer is to honor each moment as a sacred place and time. May I not be indifferent to the life around me. I would wish to be sensitive to a stranger who looks to me for a greeting and to a friend who needs a listener. May I not give of myself in a careless way, but in full awareness of the possibilities in each hour. I must release the ego that asks for reward in return for giving. Not expect recognition or even remembrance that some word of mine may have lasting meaning. I pray to offer the best of myself, then release the experience as a seed upon the wind, trusting God to carry it into other seasons and to some far blossoming that I may never know. And, yeah.
Carol, you're inspiring us already. I never wrote a poem in my life, but I thought of a little poem while we were talking.
Oh, please share with us.
Well,
can you?
My brother, Roger, was 7 years older. When I was about 10, I thought handsome people were good and ugly people were bad, kind of automatically. He says, no, to me that's wrong. Doesn't matter what they look like. And then this came home to me with startling clarity in college. And I'll read a little bit.
Yeah, please do.
I don't know if my poetry is.
There's no judgment.
Appearances can deceive. You shall know a fruit tree by its fruit. Do not judge it. There's much more there to boot. Appearances deceive, you see. Ugly pimples, Hittite nose, lips so thick, swarthy skin, he made it made your stomach sick. Who is this man repulsive to behold? It could be Jesus Christ, who was a Semite, so I'm told. Appearances then can deceive, you see. Whom else do I recall with homely visage to deplore? Hyman Minsky was his name. That's really a person. A classmate years before. He was so evil. Was he so evil then, a robber and a cheat? No, sir, I declare, he was a most angelic man.
I've never known a gentler, kinder human being. A friend's treasure. Genius was there in his mind. This guy memorized the log table to two places so he could take the fourth power or something and the cube or something in his head.
He must be in the first two words.
Appearances can deceive, you see.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Tomorrow morning, if anybody's not going to be here tomorrow and brought something, does anybody else have something to share with us?
Got something that I don't know.
I did write something yesterday, but I'm not an elder.
It doesn't matter one bit. I made a judgment.
It's not a poem.
It doesn't.
It's an essay.
Yeah. My only thing is that because of time, you know, I think we'll read a certain amount. So if I stop you, you know, if it's a long, there's just a certain, just because it's not, we don't have time. But so pick out, you know, what you feel you would like to share with the class.
I'll just start at the beginning.
Yeah, okay.
And you can see if you care to.
Oh, I'm sure we would love to hear it all.
I am writing with a pencil, and my English may not be perfect.
Oh, please don't. No apologies.
You said yesterday that maybe this week that had passed would bring about some memories that, and I thought of an incident in my own life.
Wonderful.
Which taught me that the full impact of an incident or a tragedy may come.
Read it for
long
us.
After. Okay, so I call it When Reality Hits. People in crowded buses, people pedaling their way home. Peddling. People carrying their groceries needed for dinner, soon to be cooked. 10 or 11 years old I was, walking homewards after an afternoon of playing with a friend. Air raid sirens suddenly blared. People fled into shelters. I just stood there, lost, alone, bewildered, not knowing which way to turn. A voice called to me. I looked around. A young girl in her teens opened the gate and told me to follow. I did, recognizing her as an older student at school, but she knew me and rushed me into her home. Do you want to hear more?
Go ahead. Yes.
I spent some hours with these kind people, not fully understanding what was happening. When the clearing sounded again, it was safe.